Last month. When I talk about the law of karma, I gave you one important and difficult passage about karma. And that is, I don't know whether you have the sheets still with you. So that passage says Buddha represented Buddha as saying, I do not teach the extinction of karmas that are willed, performed, and heaped up without their results having been experienced. And these results in this life or in the next life or in the lives after next. And never do I teach making an end of suffering without the results of karmas that are willed, performed, and heaped up, having been experienced. That means there is no extinction of karma if its results are not experienced. And the results can be experienced in this life or in the next life or in the lives after next. And Buddha continued saying, I do not teach making an end of suffering without the results of karmas having been experienced. That means there is no making an end of suffering if the results of karmas are not experienced. Now, at first reading, this passage seems strange. So the first sentence means, karmas do not become extinct so long as their results are not experienced. And they can be experienced in this life or in the next life or in the lives after next. But according to the law of karma, karmas become defunct. It's called defunct if they do not give results in their time of giving results. Now there are karmas that give results in this life, and there are there is another that gives results in the next life, immediate next life. And then there are karmas that give results in the lives after next until one becomes an arahant and passes away. Now, if a karma that must give results in this life does not give results because of lack of favorable conditions, then it becomes defunct. The karma was done, but if that karma does not give result in this life, then it becomes defunct. It will not give results in next life or in future lives. And also the karma which is to give results in the next life, if it does not give results in the next life, then it becomes defunct. It will not give results in the lives after next until the end of samsara. And there are other karmas that give results beginning with the life after next life until the end of samsara for that person. And those karmas will not become defunct until that person becomes an arahant and passes away, or so long as there is samsara for him. Now the first karma that gives result in this life, this karma will not become extinct or defunct so long as it has not given results and so long as there is this life. But after this life, if it does not become, if it does not give results, then it will become defunct. And the second type of karma that give results in next life. So long as it has not given results in the next life, and so long as the next life exists, then that karma does not become defunct. But when its time of giving results is past, that means when a person is reborn in the third existence, then that second type of karma also becomes defunct. The third type of karma that give result from the third existence to the end of samsara, it will not become defunct so long as there is samsara for him. So the commentary says that it is to show that you cannot escape the results of karma so long as you are in this samsara. Now the second sentence, that there is no making an end of suffering without the results of karmas having been experienced. Here we are not to understand that if we have not experienced the results of all karmas, we cannot make an end of suffering. We are not to take that way. Because if we take it that way, that we cannot make an end of suffering until we have experienced all results of karma, actually there would be no making an end of suffering, because we had a big amount of karma accumulated in the past. And if we are to experience all the results of the good and bad karmas before we can make an end of suffering, there would be no making an end of suffering at all. So here I think what we should understand is we must have experienced the result of karma which we did in the past before we can make an end of suffering, before we can become an arahant and leave the samsara. Now every being has experienced the results of karma. There is no being who has not experienced the result of karma, either good or bad. So what this sentence means, in my opinion, is that all of us experience the result of good or bad karma which we did in the past. And if we have not experienced any results of the good or bad karma we did in the past, there can be no making an end of suffering. Let us take an example of the Venerable Angulimala. Now, as you all know, Venerable Angulimala was first a robber, and he killed thousands of people, and he was feared by all people, and it is said that no one could escape him. But later Buddha went to him, met him, and preached to him, and he became his disciple. He threw away all his weapons, and he followed the Buddha, and later he became a monk, and then he practiced meditation and became an arahant. Now, during his life as a robber, as he had killed thousands of people, he had all kinds of akusala karma, those that will give result in that life, and those that will give results in the next life, and then in the life after the next life. But he became an arahant, and so those that will give result in the next life, and those that will give result in the life after next, could not do anything to him. But those that give result in the present life, he suffered ill consequences of that and those karmas. Now, since he was feared, even when he became a monk, people were afraid of him. And when people saw him, they went away and they closed their doors. And so he had difficulty in getting food enough for him. And also it is said that sometimes a person may throw a stone not to him, but that stone would hit him, and so he had a broken head and so on. So he suffered the ill consequences or bad consequences of his karma, which gave results in that present life. But with regard to the results that would be experienced in the next life and the life after next, these results cannot come about because he gets out of samsara after he died as an arahant. So in that case, Angulimala was able to make an end of suffering without experiencing the result of all of his karmas. But he did experience the painful results of his karma that could give results in the present life. After understanding the law of karma in general, we will now study the divisions of karma. Now you have the sheets. And first, karma is divided into two, wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. But here, the division is by way of function and so on. And I cannot explain in much detail these different kinds of karma. So if you want to understand these karmas in detail, please read the Comprehensive Guide to a Manual of Abhidhamma by Bhikkhu Bodhi. That is the translation of the Abhidhammatasangha or the Manual of Abhidhamma, and also explanations given. So the karma is grouped in four groups, and each group consisting of four karmas. So the first group is by way of function, how these karmas function. So by way of function, there are four kinds of karma. And the first one is called productive karma. That means karma that produces results. And the second one is supportive karma. Now this karma does not produce any results itself, but it supports the productive karma. And the third one is obstructive karma. Also, this karma does not produce any results, but it interferes with or obstructs the results of the productive karma. And then the fourth kind of karma is destructive karma. This karma destroys the results of the productive karma. So according to the way of their functions, according to their functions, karma are divided into these four. For example, the productive karma makes a person born as a human being. So as a result of a productive karma, a person is born as a human being. And during his life, he enjoy good health, prosperity, long life, and so on. And that is the result of his supportive karma. If he is not healthy, if he is poor, if he does not live long, then it may be the obstructive karma operating. If that person dies in an accident or dies abruptly of some disease, then it is said to be the destructive karma operating. So if productive karma give results at the moment of conception as well as during life, and then supportive karma supports it, and the obstructive karma obstructs it, and the destructive karma destroys the result of that productive karma. Now, karma is divided into four by order of giving results also. That is, these four types of karma give results in the order given here. And the first of them is weighty karma. Weighty karma means powerful karma that has a priority in giving results. If it is a wholesome karma, it is the jhana wholesome karma. And if it is unwholesome, then it is what is called the five grave sins, that is, killing one's own father, killing one's own mother, killing an arahant, wounding the Buddha, and causing division in the Sangha, and also the fixed wrong view, that means taking that there is no cause, no effect, and so on. So they are called weighty karma. And the second kind of karma is death proximate karma. That means karma that a person does immediately before his death. Although that person may have done wholesome or unwholesome deed habitually, but if immediately before his death he does a wholesome karma or unwholesome karma, then that wholesome or unwholesome karma that he does immediately before his death has the priority to give results. That means priority over the habitual karma or reserve karma. Habitual karma is karma that you do every day, that you do by habit. People do both wholesome karma and unwholesome karma every day, and so they become habitual karma. And the last one is called reserve karma. That means not included in the three given above. So the last one is called reserve karma. If there are no weighty karma or death proximate karma or habitual karma, then the reserve karma gets chance to give results. So in order of giving results, these are the four kinds of karma. Now the third division of karma is by time of giving results. So there are also four of them. The first type is immediately effective karma. That means karma that give results in this life. And number two is subsequently effective karma. That means karma that give results in next life. And number three, indefinitely effective karma, is that which give results beginning with the life after next until the end of samsara. And the fourth is called defunct karma. Defunct karma is actually not a separate karma, but if immediately effective karma cannot give results in this life, then it becomes defunct. And if subsequently effective karma cannot give results for lack of favorable conditions, if it cannot give results in the next life, then it becomes defunct. But the indefinitely effective karma can never become defunct until the end of samsara. So when the first, the second, and the third do not give results within the time of their giving results, then they become defunct karma. Now among these four, the number three, indefinitely effective karma, is the most important for us, because immediately effective karma may not give results in this life, and subsequently effective karma may not give results in the next life, and then they are gone. But indefinitely effective karma follows us all through the samsara. And it is this indefinitely effective karma that helps beings who have fallen to hell and other woeful states come up again and be reborn as human beings and as devas. So all of us, all beings, have a store of this indefinitely effective karma, and when the circumstances are favorable, we get the results of this karma. The fourth division is by place of giving results. Now the first one is unwholesome karma that give results in four woeful states and also in sense sphere and material sphere beings. And the second is sense sphere wholesome karma. And it gives results in the sense sphere and also in material sphere and in material sphere.
But the third, material sphere wholesome karma give results only in material sphere. And fourth, in material sphere wholesome karma give results only in immaterial sphere existences. Now, in order to understand that you have to understand first the 31 planes of existence, and then how the each one of them give results. So you have to go to a Abhidhamma book to understand the details of the results given by these four kinds of karmas. So I gave you these divisions of karma just for your information, and also arouse your curiosity so that you want to understand more. So if you want to understand more, you pick up the comprehensive guide and read it. Now we come to the division again, which is of practical application. Because when we understand which are unwholesome karma and which are wholesome karmas, then we can avoid what is wholesome unwholesome karma, and we can practice what is wholesome karma. Now the unwholesome karma is divided into 10 kinds. Three done by body, four by speech, and three in mind only. So unwholesome karma done by body or done through body is of three kinds. The first one is killing, the second stealing, and third sexual misconduct. Now killing means killing a living being. And killing a living being means killing a human being or an animal or even the smallest insects. So anything which is called a living being is not to be killed or not to be deprived of life. And when a person kills any living being, then he is doing the unwholesome karma. And the second one is stealing. Stealing means taking anything that is not given by its owner. And sexual misconduct means misconduct in sexual matters. So not only adultery, but other misconduct also is included here. And unwholesome karma done by speech is divided into four. And the first one is lying, so telling lies, telling what is not true. And here it becomes a real unwholesome karma only when it is detrimental to the welfare of those to whom you tell a lie. And number two is slandering. That means backbiting with the intention of dividing two people. And number three is harsh speech, using strong language, abusive language, and so on. And number four is frivolous talk. That means talking nonsense, talking what is not conducive to spiritual welfare. So these are called unwholesome karma by speech. And then there are three unwholesome karma done in mind only, and the first of them is covetousness. That means the desire to possess something that belongs to another person. Now, if you see something in the possession of another person, and if you have the greed that you want to possess it yourself, then that is called covetousness. It is not just not attachment to one's own property or others, but it is the unfair desire to possess a property or whatever which belongs to another person. And number two is ill will, that means hatred, or the desire for other people to come to harm, or to be injured, or to die. And then number three is wrong view, that means taking that there is no karma, there is no result of karma, and so on. And so these three are done not by body or by speech, but only in one's mind. And so they are called three, and that arises through mind only. So these ten are unwholesome karmas. So when we know that these are unwholesome karma, we are to avoid them. Now, there is no drinking among these ten intoxicants and others. But the commentaries explain that it should be included in number three by body, misconduct. Now, the Pali word for that number three is kamesu michachara. And kamesu means sensual things, not just sexual things. So drinking and taking intoxicants is a kind of misconduct concerning sensual things, that is taste. So drinking and taking intoxicants is said to be included in number three done by the body. Now we come to wholesome karma. So there are ten kinds of sense via wholesome karma, and there are two sets of them. So the first set is just the opposite of the ten kinds of unwholesome karma. So abstention from killing, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, abstention from lying, slandering, harsh speech, frivolous talk, and the third group is non-covetousness or non-greed. That means not coveting other people's property, and non-ill will or non-hatred. That means loving kindness. And the third one, right view or non-delusion, is the view that there is cause, there is effect, and everything in the world is dependent upon some other thing, and so on. So these ten sense via wholesome karma, these are the negative side of sense via wholesome karma. And there is another set of ten sense via wholesome karma that are on the positive side. And so there are ten of them, and the first one is giving, dana. So making donations, charity is giving. And the second one is virtue or moral purity. That means keeping one's moral conduct pure by abstention from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, and so on. The third one is mental culture. development of one's mind towards spiritual welfare or spiritual advancement. The fourth is reverence. That means being respectful to the elders and to those who are worthy of our respect, or greeting those people and giving seats to those people and so on. And then number five is service. That means doing things for other people, doing chores and so on, and helping people in an act of meritorious deed. And those who donate labor, say, to the monastery are those who are practicing this service. And number six is sharing of merit. That means first you acquire merit yourself, and then you share this merit with other beings. And sharing of merit is just letting them, other people, get chance to get merit themselves, depending on your merit. So it is not giving away your merit. And by sharing merit, your merit increases, because sharing of merit is, you see here, an act of wholesome karma, or an act of merit itself. And then rejoicing in others' merit. That means when merit is shared, then you say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That means good, good, good. You are happy or glad at the other people doing merit. So when you rejoice at others' merit, yeah, you get merit yourself. Because when you rejoice, your rejoice takes the other person's merit as an object, and so it is a wholesome mental state. Here, the commentary says that whether the other person shares merit with you or not, you can rejoice in the merit of others. So if other person shares merit, you can say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Or if he does not share merit with you, but you see or you learn that the other person does merit, then you can practice rejoicing in others' merit by being glad at that merit. And number eight is hearing the Dhamma, listening to the Dhamma talks. And here, learning those, learning some kind of arts or crafts or some kind of knowledge which does not conduce to harming or injuring others is also included here. Teaching the Dhamma, number nine. Here also giving talks on Dhamma and so on, and also teaching some kind of knowledge which does not conduce to injuring others, or which does not go against the teachings of the Buddha. And number 10 is straightening out one's views. That means having a correct view concerning the cause and effect and so on. So this straightening of one's view is actually the opposite of the wrong view. Now, straightening of one's view is very important, because if our views are not straight, our views are incorrect, then whatever we do will not be kusala, or mental wholesome mental state. That is why straightening of one view is said to be very important, and we need to have the correct view or right view about cause, about the effect, and about things that are related as cause and effect. Now the first three of them, dana, sila, and bhavana, are the three steps to be followed by the disciples of the Buddha. Now the first one, giving or dana. Among the 10 perfections practiced and fulfilled by bodhisattvas, dana comes first. So dana here means giving, helping other people, making donations and so on. Dana is important because it makes our mind pliant or soft, and also if it gives us chance to practice getting rid of attachment. So whatever we give, we not only give that thing, but we also give up attachment to that thing. So by giving, we are practicing the getting rid of attachment to that thing. And the second one is sila, or moral purity, or it's called virtue. And it is control of our bodily actions and speech. So long as we keep sila, we keep the precepts, we keep our moral purity, then we do not commit unwholesome actions by body and by speech. As laypersons, you can keep 5 precepts and sometimes 8 precepts like you do here. And if you want to practice more, you can take 10 precepts. And the third one, mental culture, is the practice of samatha and vipassana meditations. By practice of samatha meditation, you get strong concentration, and if you are successful with any one of the 40 subjects of samatha meditation, you get psychic powers and all and others. And by the practice of vipassana, you ultimately realize nibbana, or you achieve eradication of all mental defilements. In number 4 and number 5, reverence, or being respectful to others and doing service to others. These two can be included in number 2, moral purity. Because when you practice sila, you control your bodily actions and speech. And reverence and service is a kind of controlling your bodily actions and verbal actions. So they can be included in sila, or number 2. And sharing of merit can be included in number 1, dana. And rejoicing in others' merit is also included in giving, because it is connected with giving. Not one's giving, but the other's giving. And then hearing the Dhamma, teaching the Dhamma, and straightening out one's view can be included in the third mental culture. So hearing the Dhamma is a kind of mental culture. Teaching the Dhamma is a kind of mental culture because you are developing your mind and straightening out one's views. One's view is also a mental culture. So we can reduce all these 10 into 3, say if we include 4 and 5 in 2, 6 and 7 in 1, and 8, 9 and 10 in number 3. Now that we understand the unwholesome karma and wholesome karma, we can follow the teaching of the Buddha given in the Dhammapada. That is, not doing all evil, accomplishing what is wholesome, purifying one's mind. This is the teachings of the Buddha. Now, I gave this translation very literal. But it may not be good English, not doing all evil. Because the Pali word is sabba, papasa. So sabba means all, and papa means evil, so all evil. But people said that if you say not doing all evil, that means you can do a little evil. So in good English, you say not doing any evil, and not all evil. So not doing any evil, that means refraining from doing akusala and wholesome karmas. And then accomplishing what is wholesome, that means cultivating wholesome karma or the wholesome acts. And purifying one's mind. So there are defilements or impurities in our minds, and the purifying one's mind is also the teachings of the Buddha. So in this verse, or with this verse, Buddha admonishes us to avoid doing evil and to cultivate what is wholesome and also to purify our minds. The Dhammapada commentary explains this verse as the first foot, sabba papasa akarana, not doing all unwholesome deeds. That's not difficult to understand. The second one is kusalasa upasampada, generating wholesome deeds and the development of what is generated. So here, accomplishing what is wholesome or cultivating what is wholesome means generating wholesome deeds and then doing these deeds again and again. So not just doing wholesome once, but doing it again and again so that it is developed. And also the commentary says that it is to be done from the renunciation to the arahatamaga, that means to the gaining of enlightenment. And I think the commentary connects this to the life of the Buddha. So as a prince, Buddha renounced the world, and then for 6 years in the forest he practiced austerities, and then ultimately at the end of 6 years he reached enlightenment. So from the moment of his renunciation until he attains attained enlightenment, Buddha generated wholesome deeds and also developed them. The third one, Sacitta Pariyodhapanam, means causing one's mind to be cleansed of the 5 mental hindrances. So there are said to be 5 mental hindrances, and you as meditators are all familiar with these 5 mental hindrances. So to To clear one's mind of these five mental hindrances is also an important act, because so long as there are mental hindrances in our minds, we cannot